now, the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a great Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We are going to have Phil Savage on today's show. Phil, of course, the longtime general manager, front office executive, now the GM of the Alliance. He has a show on SiriusXM that is really, really good around the NFL draft. And I want to get to him about Josh Rosen and all the stuff around the Cardinals quarterback, Kyler Murray, and the combine. And also where we are with the hot shots. They are about the halfway mark of the season. They're home this Sunday night. Home Sunday night. And how is this league really working in Phoenix? So we'll have Phil Savage with us. Goody at the movies. So Alex Trebek, and Devin's chairman of the board today. We're going to talk about Alex Trebek with Goody. So we want to get in on that because that's just tragic news on this pancreatic cancer. And then what Alex Trebek said last night, I don't know if you saw that in Jeopardy. And I bring this up because my 23-year-old daughter yesterday called me about it. She's in Chicago and she just calls out of the blue and says, can you believe Alex Trebek? I get home. My wife says, can you believe about Alex Trebek? I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. And I see Alex Trebek, Alex Trebek. The way that he presented himself, he's an iconic figure. He started doing Jeopardy in 1984. Anybody who does this for longer than a nanosecond, ton of respect. The fact that he's had such great success and seems so humble and so wise and all that, why do we not talk about him? And also, I did go see Captain Marvel with my daughter, my other daughter. We went to a screening, and Goody has got some weigh-in with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central, on Captain Marvel. So I have Goody at the movies with us today. What's going on in the world of sports? Brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. And you do it with life insurance. You could do it with annuities. This morning, I was with a group of guys, and we were talking about, because I now have my license. I can go out. I can visit with people on this subject. And talking to them about the new annuity products at Sagicor. You may have 50 grand, you may have 100 grand, you may have 2 grand. It doesn't matter. It's putting yourself in a space where the products that they have at Sagicor can really make a difference for you, not today, but 10 years from now, 20 years from now. If you didn't come home tonight, would everything be handled with your family, with your kids, with your wife, with your significant other? Very simple stuff. Log on to Sagicor now. Protect what matters most. That's at Sagicor. We appreciate their support. Phil Savage here in about 10 minutes. So the sports news today, I am not going to sit here and make a big deal out of the Phoenix Suns continuing to win worthless, meaningless games at the end of March, again, or middle of March. Again, this is a franchise that hasn't been into the postseason since May of 2010. So all of a sudden, everything is peachy keen because they've won 4 or 5 against a bunch of bad teams. No, it's fine. I'm not Mr. Negative on this. I'm just a realist, guys. We have to expect more from the owner of a franchise that bought the team for $420 million. And now that franchise is worth $2 billion. And he hasn't delivered one playoff game, not one, since May 29th of 2010. So for them to win 4 or 5 against a bunch of bad teams, I'm going to get the pom-poms out and say, hey, this is great. We don't have the worst record in the NBA anymore by one game. No, you should expect more. You should expect more as a sports fan. Come on, get after it a little bit here. Don't just settle for mediocrity. And even less than mediocrity. If you haven't had a playoff game since 2010, that's less than mediocrity. I'm not going to let him off the hook. But Devin Booker at 41. Tyler Johnson's done a good job since they brought him over from Miami. They play at Portland. That will be on Saturday night. So they win there. I think the big story is the positivity around the Coyotes. Coyotes tonight, they're at home. They play Calgary. Calgary's really good. Coyotes had one of their worst losses of the season the other night. When the Coyotes were playing against the Anaheim Ducks, they end up losing. They end up coming up short. They didn't play well. Their coach Rick Tocchet wasn't happy. They play Calgary. That will be tonight. I've said to you through the last about 6 weeks that I could do quarterback for Cardinals conversation day after day, week after week, unless there is something new. I'm not going to do it every day because it's low-hanging fruit. It's just not happening. I'm not going to sit here and throw it out there like, what should the Cardinals do? Yesterday, it was Josh Rosen, according to several published reports, that he is on the market, trade rumors. I talked to some agents yesterday, said that they have not heard that. It's very early in the process. The agent for Kyler Murray ripped the NFL Network because they ripped on his client. It's like kids in the sandbox, man, I tell you. You said that about my client. Well, he's not good. My client's better. This could go on until the draft on April 25th, and I'm going to take this pen and ram it through my ear from one side to the other if it does, because I'm just not about that. Not every day. I do think, from my understanding, and again, this is just me talking to agents. I don't talk to people inside the Cardinals front office, but the agent world would know. Is there interest in Kyler Murray? True interest? Sure. Is that interest to take him and turn around and spin him off to somebody else? Possibly. I think the Cardinals have done a good job of stirring up interest. I don't think that this is just something where they've sat back and said, well, we're not quite sure what we're going to do. They've played poker, line season, however you want to call it. It's the front office, the politics, and the world of sports. So I do like the direction they're going with this. But again, today, for this moment, anything that you read about how he's being shopped or traded, I'm just going to sit here and say not true. On the baseball front, so the Diamondbacks yesterday, they lose in exhibition play. The story there is Robbie Ray struck out eight yesterday, struck out not just eight in his time, but struck out eight in a row for the Diamondbacks. They open their regular season here in a few weeks. They host Cleveland today with Greinke against Trevor Bauer. And one last story in this segment, and that is I don't do much around around horses. I showed horses as a kid, showed horses professionally, believe it or not. I was a big old kid on a saddle. But growing up in San Diego, I'd be at Del Mar. I'd be around that whole circle. Have you seen what's going on at Santa Anita? 21 horses have died since December 26th. Now, we've seen where animal activists have shown up. The Iditarod is being referred to as the I killed a dog. You know, this idea of having sports with animals. I'm telling you, 21 horse deaths since December 26th, with the Triple Crown approaching, and they've stopped racing at Santa Anita, the premier track. This is a story because we have Turf Paradise here. There's a lot of horsemen and women here in our state. Yeah, this isn't front page stuff today. Guarantee you this is going to be front page stuff and front news stuff here in the next 24, 48 hours. It's coming. And as somebody who loves showing, it's one thing to show a horse and to do like trail and Western equitation. It's another to take a horse and try and run him down a sloppy track because there's been so much rain out in California. And they've got to euthanize these horses right in front of people. It's another thing to overwork these animals. But the numbers don't lie. 21 deaths since December 26th. I know it's not front page stuff today, but it's coming. Just trust me on that. It's coming. All right, Phil Savage on the other side. We'll talk about the Alliance. We'll talk about the draft stuff around the Cardinals with Josh Rosen and Kyler Murray. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. So I want to say it was last September, October, I went to a Hot Shots event. Scott Brubaker had just gotten into town. He called me and said, hey, we're unveiling our jerseys and that sort, and the front office is going to be there. And I wanted to meet Phil Savage. There's like 100 fans over at ASU, and I heard Phil speaking afterwards. He and I talked. We actually walked out through the parking lot and just kicked things around. Saw him at a Cardinals game, and I felt like here's somebody that it's a recognizable name that's been around the NFL, that's been around the college game on all fronts, credibility higher, along with Rick Neuheisel, who we've had on the show a bunch. Believe it or not, the Hot Shots have the halfway mark of their season this Sunday. It's already halfway done. They play San Antonio this Sunday night at home. Wanted to have Phil on to talk about the Hot Shots as the general manager. Also, Phil is an NFL analyst with SiriusXM, does a great job, ESPNU, and several podcasts. I appreciate you coming on. How are you, Phil?
I'm good, Brad. Hope you're well.
Yeah.
Got through a manic Monday after a tough defeat Sunday night, but we're going to jump back on the horse here this weekend and see if we can get something done against San Antonio.
Phil, halfway through, can you believe how fast after this Sunday it's gone?
Yeah, really felt like once we got out of the training camp scenario there in San Antonio, we were in Texas for 4 weeks. all eight teams were there. But once everybody departed and got to their home cities February 1st, we knew it would go very quickly. Some of these weeks are faster than others, particularly when we've had a couple of Saturday games, which is a fairly quick turnaround. We've been a little bit more of a Sunday game mode here the last 2 weeks. So, yeah, we're four games into it. There's six regular season games left. Of course, there's a weekend of playoffs. After that, they'll take two teams from each division. So four of the eight will make the playoffs, and then there'll be a championship game April the 27th. So regardless, we're well over halfway through our season when you count training camp plus the season itself.
Phil Savage, general manager of the Arizona Hotshots, with us. Okay, what do you make out of the league this far into the season? It seems, Phil, to me, teams are getting better. This is not the haves and have-nots. That's just my general impression. You're much closer to it. What do you see in the league?
Yeah, Brad, I think that going back to San Antonio in January, you know, one of the unique things about the league is that we're all under the same umbrella. It's a single owner entity. And so they allowed us to go and look at the other teams for scouting purposes, personnel evaluations, and then also to just take a look and see what the other teams were doing from a scheme standpoint, so none of us would go into the year completely blind. And I would tell you that from what we saw in January to what we've seen in recent weeks, there has definitely been a lot of improvement. I think the defenses are clearly ahead of the offenses, despite some of the limitations that the league has on the defensive coordinators. The fact remains is that a number of these quarterbacks, it's the first time for them to sit in the captain's chair, so to speak, in quite some time. And so there's been some growing pains there across the league with the quarterback play, trying to get in on the same page with the receivers. You know, while you have people trying to sack you and pressure you and everything else. So I think that over the next few weeks, especially here in the middle portion of the season, I think the quarterback play will probably improve. Just because of the familiarity with the systems and then just, you know, getting on the same page with the receivers, et cetera.
If you're looking at the league in terms of development, which is what it's about at its core, is it where you believe it should be, needs to be? I guess the bigger question is how many players on these rosters, let's just talk Hotshots, do you believe will keep playing after this league is done?
Yeah, Brad, I would think, I mean, this is a bit of an somewhat of an educated guess. Mm-hmm. You know, we have 52 players on our team right now. I would estimate that between 20, I would say probably half, 20 to 25 will probably get some sort of additional chance when the season is over. And I would venture to guess that, you know, maybe 10 would end up as viable options for NFL teams once they get into training camp, et cetera. And I'm going to guess on the high side that we'll have probably, you know, a half dozen guys that'll end up on NFL rosters next fall. So we don't know, you know, what a good percentage is.
Right.
We've already started talking about next year some in terms of, you know, we're wondering how many of these guys will be back as hot shots next year. I would venture to think that at least half, if not more, would be part of our team next year. It's just sort of a dart throw at what the alliance will look like in 2020. So, you know, I think our hopes is that our hope will be that, you know, 20 or so will get into NFL camps, if not a few higher than that. And then ultimately, you know, 5 to 10 will find their way to a paycheck in the NFL this fall.
Talking with Phil Savage, general manager of the Arizona Hotshots. A couple other questions on that front. If you were to look at where the league is in year one in terms of the development, I would think, Phil, the number that you gave me, if half of the players within the entire league are able to make it into the NFL, or even a quarter, then it's a success. It is doing what it's been put in place to do.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And again, I think on our side of things, from an alliance standpoint, just the idea that guys are getting to practice and play for a 10-week period, you know, you can't play football in a weight room or on a track. You
right.
have to play it on the field. And so that's the benefit of this league, is that instead of a guy spending 6 or 8 weeks you know, working on his individual techniques on air. He's actually getting to play the game. From an NFL standpoint, I think there'll be some evolution there, because one of the forks in the road, at least in my opinion, will be draft weekend. The weekend of April, the 25th, 6th, and 7th, I think, are the dates for the draft this year. Those NFL teams, let's just use the Cardinals as an example. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be more apt to sign a college free agent who's coming out of Western Illinois, let's just use as an example, versus a kid that came out of Western Illinois last year who has now played a season in the Alliance and has shown some market improvement? In other words, would the Cardinals or any of the other NFL teams be more apt to sign a guy that's got a season under his belt in the Alliance that maybe they don't have quite as good a feel for, or they think he's improved, versus taking a college free agent who's never experienced pro football at all? And I think the bottom line for me is that as this thing evolves and develops, I would suggest and think that the NFL will be more apt to take guys from the Alliance, and we will end up taking more guys as college street free agents, try to develop them, and then send them up the ladder to the NFL. Yeah. I think that would be the long-term timeline that would work really for everybody.
No, that makes a lot of sense. You really don't want to have the same roster year to year in this league. I mean, if it's to be done correctly, you don't want it to be three quarters of the same guys, right? And it's no offense to the league. It's just that's what the league is designed to do, is develop and move on.
My best guess at this would be that it's probably a two-year window, and yeah, you're either moving up or you're moving out. I think that the Alliance is a placeholder for guys that are trying to get back to the NFL that maybe had two or three or four cracks at it. And then also it's for the guys that were completely overlooked, that did not get even a cup of coffee in the NFL. And so I think within a two-season window, you'll know whether you're going to get another chance, or is it time to hang it up? Or perhaps, Brad, and I think you'll see this across the Alliance, I think there'll be a number of, let's just call them Alliance veterans, guys that are in that 27, 28, 29-year-old range, where maybe the NFL is looking at them and saying, hey, they're just too old. We'd rather, you know, hitch our wagon to a 22 or 23-year-old and see what they can do rather than somebody that we already have a book on. But I think some of those guys still enjoy the game. Mm. They can make somewhat of a living doing this. And the beauty of it is that they can take the other 6-7 months of the year and get prepared for life after football. And that's what I've really tried to encourage some of our guys, is that, look, take that time when this season's over. If the NFL shot doesn't come, then go get yourself ready for the aftermath of when your playing days are over. But I do think that there will be a handful of guys that end up having Alliance career, so to speak, because they enjoy playing the game, and it gives them some freedom to pursue other opportunities in the offseason.
One last question on this front, Phil, and that is, if you were to say, here is the poster child of what the Hot Shots and the Alliance are all about, based on your early feedback from the NFL, do you have a player on your roster that you can say, this guy's come into the league and he has helped himself, and this is what the league is all about? I know you're in midseason. There's probably a bunch of players, but do you have one in particular?
Yeah, I would say our center, Jacob Onosorgi from South Dakota State. He got maybe 2 weeks' worth of camp with the Cowboys at the end of August and actually played pretty well in the fourth preseason game, but was not kept on the practice squad, was waived, released. Nobody picked him up. We ultimately took him in what they call the non-allocation draft in September. He started and played virtually every snap for us, and he's been very solid. And I think he looks like an NFL center in that, you know, he's not going to overwhelm you with his size or speed or anything, but he's a really heady player. He knows what to do, and he's been effective for us on the interior of our offensive line. But he's a perfect example of a guy that just didn't get enough traction in the NFL just a couple weeks during training camp, and now he's had a chance to put an entire season together. I feel very certain and confident that he'll be a guy that'll be in an NFL training camp in August.
That's great. Phil Savage is with us, NFL analyst, SiriusXM, ESPNU, the general manager of the Arizona Hotshots. With the combine just wrapping up, Phil, and I know you keep your eye and ear and you're involved in this in your shows and your content, What struck you most about the combine last week? Obviously, here in Arizona, it was the Kyler Murray conversation, but what jumped out at you?
Well, the combine stories basically are retold every year. You have guys that, you know, rise because of the combine. You have other players that sink because of their combine performance. And then there's another 30 to 35 players typically in a given year that were not even in Indianapolis that will ultimately be drafted. And so, it's the same storyline every year. You just substitute the names in there. And, of course, DK Metcalf, the receiver from Ole Miss, tested off the charts, as did Montez Sweat, the defensive end, outside backer from Mississippi State. Those were a couple guys that, you know, really wowed people with their numbers. And then, of course, with Kyler Murray, it wasn't just the height, it was the hand size. Because I can tell you, Brad, if his hand size had been under 9 inches, there's no way that he would be talked about as a top 10, maybe not even a first rounder. But because he was 9.5-inch hands, now I think he's met the minimum threshold that at least one team, if not a handful of others, would seriously consider him at the top of the draft. I think that the league, the perception from people in the NFL has vastly changed over the years so that a guy like Kyler Murray can have a place in the NFL. Now, there are some old school NFL people that don't believe that you can win a Super Bowl in an air raid offense with the smallest quarterback. But the landscape has changed so dramatically in the last 10 to 15 years that there's definitely a place for him. It's going to be fascinating to see how the Cardinals handle this situation as it pertains to not only Kyler Murray, but the coach Cliff Kingsbury, and then also how it impacts Josh Rosen in terms of what is his future hold with the Cardinals. And the good news for them is if they opted to take Kyler Murray, they'd have two quarterbacks on rookie contracts. So it's a definite doable thing where they don't have to make an immediate reaction if they really do want to take a shot on Murray.
And you could flip it around, too. Josh Rosen's signing bonus is already paid out, right? So it's an advantage for a team to acquire Josh Rosen. You could look at it from that standpoint, too, correct?
Yeah, you could definitely look at it that way, and I think that's one reason why you wouldn't necessarily see Rosen moved, just because they opted to take Kyler Murray, at least for this first year, because, you know, you're talking about a quantum leap for a player who has 1 year of experience under his belt in college football, and now you're going to turn over the whole thing to him. I think it'd be a nice insurance policy to have, and I think the other thing, too, Brad, is that if Josh Rosen, let's just say they had both quarterbacks, if Josh Rosen plays well in the preseason, it only increases his value to the Cardinals in terms of future trade opportunities. So I think they'll end up holding on to him even if they go down the Kyler Murray trail.
It's really interesting, Phil. You don't see the side of trade back, acquire more picks, or go over to Bosa. I know everybody's in this belief that they're bluffing or they're being – you know, it's Lion season, I guess, the only way to put it. But you're leading me to believe that maybe having both quarterbacks here on the roster would be the way to go. That's interesting.
Yeah, I kind of think from a financial standpoint, they've already paid the money out to Rosen. So, you know, you don't want to do that for just 1 year. And then you're going to trade him for pennies on the dollar because clearly you're not going to get a top 10 pick where you took him a year ago. So I think it probably the wiser course of action to let it play itself out. And again, you're talking about a smallish player with Kyler Murray. I mean, the biggest concern I would have in terms of his play in the NFL is not necessarily the execution of how he would play, but just the durability factor. I mean, the NFL is a big man sport. It's a long, grinding season, both mentally and physically. 16 regular season weeks. If you're lucky enough to get into the playoffs, you're talking about 20 weeks. Going against very large, fast people that are trying to kill the quarterback. You know, I just think that you know, anytime you have more than one quarterback, I think it's a good thing. It keeps your season from being completely derailed. And, you know, this could all be just speculation and talk. I mean, clearly the Cardinals could use Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams or any of these top defensive players. But I would say that if they think that the combination of coach and quarterback, Kingsbury and Murray, is one that can take them to another level and create a lot of excitement with their fan base, then it's something they definitely will consider.
Last question before I let you go, and I appreciate your time talking with Phil Savage. That is, there's a ton of in-state players this year, Phil, and they've even started in high school, like Byron Murphy, N'Keal Harry, and Ryan Finley. We've seen them from high school to college, the combine, now to the next level. I don't know if in this short period of time since the combine you've been able to get any feedback or you have some observations on any of the in-state players. Even Emmanuel Butler, the receiver up at NAU, went to Mountain Point High. Have you heard anything about the in-state guys and how they performed and your view of them at the next level?
Yeah, the one guy I can talk about is N'Keal Harry. I saw him in a game, actually, that same weekend that we met at the Hot Shots event. And so, you know, I didn't expect him to run particularly fast. That's not his game. He's a power forward type of outside receiver. I think he, you know, will fit a role for a team as these NFL rosters try to create some variety across their receiver group. You know, he fits as that X receiver, the back shoulder fade, the inside slant, uses size to ward off the defender, and then catch and break tackles and make people get him on the ground out in space. So, you know, I think he can be a good pro. Again, if he's in the proper role and in an offense that will feature him in the things that he's really good at and see if he can have some growth in other areas. But that's one player that I could speak on for sure.
Phil, appreciate the time and the insight. We'll see you this weekend. Home game for the Hot Shots against San Antonio. Thanks.
Okay, Brad, I appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
You as well. There's Phil Savage with us. Sirius XM, ESPNU NFL analyst, and the general manager of the Arizona Hotshots. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports, and I can only do Josh Rosen and Kyler Murray for so many days in a row, and I still have another, I don't know, Bill, I think it's 49 days to the draft, something like that.
Potentially, 10 years after that.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's true, because if the Cardinals screw this up, it's going to set them back further than the Matt Leinart screw-up if they don't do the right thing with the number one overall pick. And the Leinart thing, they got lucky with Kurt Warner, so I just don't know.
Yeah, he was just sitting there. I mean,
here, take Kurt Warner for a bag of rocks. Oh, wait, Carson Palmer for a seventh-round pick. That's one thing. It's another when you have the number one overall pick, and if you whiff, if you miss on this, and Michael's never been there, Keim has never been there, Kingsbury's never even been a head coach. They have a bunch of guys that have never been there, and if they screw this up, it will set the organization back forever.
I just like that idea of, like, Kurt, you're not doing anything, right? You got a minute. Can you come
right.
Run in there in the huddle to take over for a little bit? Would you?
You're Kurt Warner. Kurt, and whenever I have Kurt on and I refer to him as you were on the scrap heap, he gets all mad. What do you mean I was on the scrap heap? You were released. That's the scrap heap. Okay? That's what it is.
For a genuinely nice guy, he is surprisingly protective of his legacy, I think.
You are correct.
But probably has to be. Probably feels like he has to be, you know.
No, I agree with that. I think there's people in his circle that are saying you can't ever question anything. Well, it was a donut hole when he was with the Giants. Let's just be honest in that with his
absence. Why took him a year to get in the Hall of Fame.
Where do you put Alex Trebek if we're talking about media influencers in our lifetime?
It's a weird thing because he's ubiquitous. Everybody, I mean, you see that yesterday when he made the announcement, which he handled great.
Yeah,
I mean, it was moving. It was funny. It was, you know, it gave you all the information you needed, and it acknowledged what an uphill fight it was. I mean, you know, it was just really well done. He's ubiquitous, and everybody, you can tell just from the walks of life that people reached out to him. You know, that. What a big influence he's been. But then you step back and you think, and this is, I think he's a great host, but he's the host of Jeopardy, and that's it. I mean,
yeah.
It's not like on the side he did, you know, this other thing, or he had this hour interview show that he did every 6 months on HBO or something. You know, I mean, this is what he did, and I think that there's nothing wrong with that. That's not to denigrate it. That's not to downplay it at all. But I think it says probably more about him and how much people like him than anything else.
You know, what struck me about yesterday's video was he looks great. That's the part. That's the part that really, really hit hard. It's like he looks great.
How's he sounded great?
Yes, and he said no. That's true. That's true. That's what really hit me hard. That's what struck me.
I think he says he wants to work through the treatment and all that stuff, and I hope that he's able to. And I don't know that he will. Somebody posted something on my Facebook timeline that video reminded them of like when Peter Jennings came on and said he had cancer. But I thought that didn't remind me of that at all, because like you say, he sounded so vital and so healthy. Peter Jennings sounded kind of rough when he came on and said, you know, I have cancer, and he never saw him again. You know, he said he wanted to continue working and stuff, but you never saw Peter Jennings again. I mean, Trebek, I found that was completely different. I mean, it was almost like it made it more surreal in some way, I think.
Well, I thought where Pat Sajak weighed in too, because my understanding is they tape right across from each other. Like they're in the same area. Have you been over there and seen that whole setup before? Have done anything on that?
I've never done it. No. I did a thing occasionally where they, they come to town and they have these sort of mass tryouts for the various shows.
Right.
And I'd love to have done Jeopardy. My mom and I played Jeopardy back in the Don Pardo days, you know, but I tried out for the Wheel of Fortune, and I'm not good at that anyway. But I got there, and this is no lie. I don't know if it was because there's so many people or because I was writing a story about it or what. I could not do one. I could not make thoughts come into my brain.
Sure.
I just sat there and looked at this puzzle. And I mean, you hear about stuff like that all the time, but that really happened to me. I just completely froze up, and I was. In a lot of ways, I think Pat Sajak, who I've always liked, him a lot too. But he owes a lot to Jeopardy and Alex Trebek. I mean, they're out there produced by the same company, and Trebek's got a big hand in that. And they, I'm not surprised. I mean, that has been. It seems weird now, but I mean, it was not necessarily the humongous, unstoppable franchise that it is now. Way back then, I mean, Jeopardy was a revival,
right.
So that. You know, it's pretty amazing what Trebek's been able to do with it. And as you say, I mean, and how associated with it he's become.
Growing up in Southern California, talking to Goody at the movies and other stuff, chief film critic, media critic for AZ Central and Gannett. Growing up in Southern California, my wife and I went to Price is Right once, got through, we're in the crowd. And you have this nervous energy around you, like, are they going to call my name? You know, Brad Sussman, come on down. And it was Bob Barker and the way that it was all produced and all of that. It was growing up out there, that's what everybody did. We'd go do a game show. I don't know why game shows do so well in where space and TV is changing constantly. I remember when I was at Channel 3, they would lose the rights to Jeopardy. I think they went over to Channel 15 for a bit, and then they came back, and it was as though the station was going to crash and burn because we lost Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune. You know, why is it they do so well?
Part of it would. Part of it would. I mean, because those things are ratings magnets.
Yeah.
I think that they're fun. I mean, and everybody can play. You don't have to. You can enjoy. That's one of the few things that. I mean, I love watching basketball, but it's not like playing, you know. I mean,
yeah.
But you can actually sort of be. I can sit here and yell at the answers on Jeopardy. I mean, you think of the great scene in Diner where he's yelling out the. You're in some ways you're sort of a participant, and you like to think. It's also that sort of thing where you think, oh, well, if I could just get on, you know. Man, I could make a fortune. You know, I could be like that Ken Jennings guy or whatever. You know, that made however much he made. But you, of course, you can't, as you know. And by the way, did you ever get on the show?
No. I mean, and so the ratings moving forward are going to be gigantic. I would think just enormous. This was the number one story on the Today Show this morning.
Of course, but as you know, I mean, there's a little bit of weirdness there because they tape those things. you know, they'll do like 2 weeks in a day, you know, and, right. and so the timing of that will be interesting. And if he does step back his schedule a little, I mean, although they do them because of that reason, you can, even if there's a glitch in like how much he can participate for a while, you probably wouldn't notice as much as you would.
Right.
You know, because of the way that they do it. But I mean, the ratings are huge. And if he ever does, if he says, you know, I'm going to take some time off, this is going to be my last show for a little bit, you know, the whole world to watch, I think.
Sure, sure. I went and saw Marvel the other day with my daughter. She was geeked up like nothing else. And this movie is going to do huge, huge numbers. You wrote about it on a different space, though, because of the trollers and the spoilers. Talk to me about that a little bit.
Well, they Rotten Tomatoes actually had to change their website. They used to have a feature, I mean, up until, you know, a week ago or a week and a half ago, that they had a feature where you could go in and talk about the movie that you wanted to see before it came out. And you know, this is popular for, like, Avengers movies and stuff. You can go in and, oh, I want to see what Thanos does and da-da-da-da. But whenever there's a movie with people of color or women in power and in an important role, the trolls would take over and just trash it. And to the extent that with this, that they were, the number of people who wanted to see it, which is sort of a ranking that they do, went way down. So they finally just said, we're not going to do this anymore. Well, you know, we'll bring it back after the movie starts. You can say whatever you want, but we're not going to allow this, which I think is, you know, I'm all for free speech, but don't just, I'm also not for yelling fire in a theater, as they said. and if you write about it, then they come after you, and which is fine. But it drives me a little bit crazy. They haven't seen the movie because nobody had. I mean, and the screening that you went to, that was one of the first. I mean, there was a junket screening, but I mean, it's not like people knew whether the thing was actually any good or not. What happened here was Brie Larson, who stars and is an Oscar-winning actress and is a very good actress. She made a comment to Marie Claire, the magazine, where she said that on her junket, she wanted to focus on people of color, people who are handicapped people. You know, that she wanted to really try to push inclusion among media because, as you know, and I know, I mean, there's a lot of white guys mostly.
Yep.
And people went nuts, and they're like, she's saying she hates us. I mean, that's what people were posting on my Facebook and my Twitter page. She says that she hates white men and all that. She never said she hated white men. she said that she gave an interview to a black woman because she felt like that they weren't represented enough. I mean, how that goes from trying to do something inclusive, translating that into I hate white men, I think is possibly at the root of what a lot of our problems are right now.
Yeah. No, the movie itself, I thought it was fine. It's you know what you get when you walk into there. It's fine.
It was fine.
Yeah, it was 2 hours of candy out there. what else is in your wheelhouse right now? What are you seeing? What are you working on?
I'm doing a lot of stuff. Yeah, and this here's something I'm working on. There's one of the great episodes of Seinfeld is the one with Keith Hernandez, right?
Yep.
And Jerry and George are in the locker room, and they see Keith Hernandez. It's before they meet, but they see him. And they're saying, wow, that's Keith Hernandez. And George says, you know, I hear he's a Civil War buff. And he says, I'd like to be a buff. And it's like, I've always wanted to be a buff. I've always wanted to get obsessed about something. So no surprise to you, what I decided to do this basketball season is I got obsessed with Wofford College and my buddy, Michael Young, who's a coach.
Yeah.
And now they're ranked 22nd in the nation, whatever the big ranking is now that they use instead of RPI. They're like number 14 in the country or something. So they're going to go to the tournament, whether they win their conference tournament or not. But I'm going to write something about that, about sort of healthy obsessions.
Good.
And I think that sports is a big one and a good one. I mean, you know, you can take it too far. I mean, you know, insert Cubs fan here, I guess, or now maybe the Red Sox. The Red Sox fan is taking over for the Cubs fan because nothing breeds arrogance like success. But I think it's fun to care about for 2 hours something that doesn't really matter.
Well,
I think it's good for you.
You remember the days when Suns fans painted their houses purple and orange. And there was trophy guy at the Suns games, which was just ridiculous. And, you know, some of their...
I wonder what those houses go for.
Yeah, right, right, right. Well, they win a few games, and their poor employees on their Twitter accounts are sitting there posting how great they are and all this nonsense. It's embarrassing. But any fan who sat there and redone their season tickets through the last 9 years, now that would be super fan. But no, that sounds like a cool story. It sounds like fun. All right, I'll let you go off that. I appreciate you as always. Thanks.
All right.
See ya. There's Goody at the Movies. Always good to catch up with Bill. Chief film critic for Gannett, Bill Goody Koontz. Devin Henry is our chairman of the board. He's so excited because it's NASCAR season. It is sport of speed. He is heading to the track. I'm actually going to the track tomorrow. Believe it or not, I am going to the track because I think it's cool that we have two races. And there's some business stuff out there. And full disclosure, I'm going to go out there and check it out. Thanks to all of our partners who are with us, the spots that you see. These are people who believe strongly in what we do, and they appreciate supporting us. We appreciate them. We are self-funded, so thanks to those people. Have yourself a great Thursday.